the Bofala podcast. Hi everyone, it's Monique Gordion, and the great news is you found the podcast, a space for stories that will arouse a smile and inspire us as we tap into our collective experiences. Enjoy.
Welcome everybody to the Bofala podcast. It's so great to have you back. It's been a while since I've posted a podcast, so I'm sorry about that, folks, but this one is going to be a good one. I have the pleasure of meeting with Kate Webster. She's a travel journalist. Hey, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Good, thanks.
We had some technical issues prior to this, but, you know, that's part of life, isn't it, Kate? These things happen.
Yeah, it happens. It happens.
So Kate and I met on a transfer bus in New Zealand last year now. I can say it's last year. We were there for a trade show, and it was really great. Did you enjoy the trade show, Kate? Busy, huh?
I did. Yeah, I always find them really helpful and great for networking. So yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was great. And they're so, just so friendly, those New Zealanders, aren't they?
They are. They're nice neighbours to have, aren't they?
They are. So, you know, there's this whole, for people who aren't Australian or New Zealanders, there's a little bit of a kind of a argy-bargy that goes on between Australia and New Zealand. But in reality, maybe it's just travellers, I don't know, but in reality, actually, I think we get on pretty well. There's a lot of Australians New Zealanders in Australia. So,
I agree. Until it comes to the rugby, though. As soon as the rugby starts, we are enemies.
That's true. Are you a rugby fan?
I am. Wallabies, of course. Yeah. But New Zealand's look just not too far behind those Wallabies. So we'll give them that.
Now, Kate, I mean, you and I both love travel, and you've done some pretty extraordinary travel adventures from what I've seen on your website and what I've heard a little bit from you. Is there any story that you would like to share with us today? Something to capture our listeners' interest?
Where do I start? It's like asking, like, who's your favourite child? I've been really lucky as a travel journalist. I have been to some of the most far-flung places in the globe and things that just blew my mind and I never dreamed imaginable. And I really could sit here and talk for hours and hours about the travel experiences. But I guess for me, one of my main focuses is wildlife and conservation style travel. And just making sure that I'm traveling to not only enrich my life, but hopefully give something back to the people and places that I also visit. I think travel is a two-way thing. It's not always about going somewhere, enjoying a resort, flopping and dropping. I think these days, and there seems to be a bit of a movement, not even a movement anymore. It's kind of a way that people are now taking responsible travel and regenerative travel to the next level. Like, they are making sure they incorporate it into their plans, and that's something that I've been doing for a while now. So I guess if I had to say I honestly couldn't pick one of my favorites, but there are a few wildlife experiences I've had that have just stuck with me forever. That is, to start with, the gorilla trekking in Rwanda. Cannot rave highly enough of this experience. So my first gorilla trek was actually in Uganda, and it was probably the hardest thing I have done in my life. It was a hard slog of a trek. It was really mountainous. It was really dense. We're in Bawindi impenetrable forest, which I can see why it gets its name. And that was my first gorilla trekking experience. And I thought, oh, look, I've done it once. It was amazing. Don't need to do it again.
Sure.
And then I got invited back to Rwanda. And I did the gorilla trek there, and it was just such a different experience. It was calmer. It was a lot easier.
Oh, that's nice.
And look, I fell in love with Rwanda. It is probably one of my favorite countries in the world. The wildlife, the people, the culture, it's just so welcoming. And do you know, Rwanda, you say Rwanda to people and they instantly go, "Oh, is it safe there?" And "Oh, what were you doing there?" And they don't realize it's actually one of the safest countries I've ever traveled. Back then I was single female traveling by myself. I honestly have never felt more welcomed and never felt more safe than I have in Rwanda. From the streets of Kigali in the main capital city, all the way out to Volcanoes National Park where the gorillas are. It was just, I didn't have to look over my shoulder. I didn't have to watch my bag. I didn't have to do any of that. I just was relaxed. And I think that's what carried through with the gorilla trekking.
And
Yeah.
just to ask a question, how long ago, like when was this that you're talking about your first adventure? Was it a long time ago or fairly recent?
My first trip to Rwanda would have been 2018.
Okay, not
And
long ago.
yeah,
I
so
mean,
it wasn't, and
5 years ago.
yeah, but to be honest, I've actually been back three times since. There is an event that happens over there, and that's what's drawn me back as well as the gorillas and the
Oh.
people and the culture.
What's the
And
event?
it is actually the sweetest event I have ever come across in my life. It's the baby gorilla naming ceremony.
Oh, okay. I'm just writing this down.
Yeah, it's called Kwita Izina. And Rwandans traditionally, with their children, they have a ceremony to name them. And because the mountain gorillas are so rare and endangered, and Rwanda's so focused on conservation, they have adopted this tradition from their children and passed it to the gorillas' children. And now they do it every year. And I think this year is going to be a big anniversary of it. I think it's, tw I'm not sure, I have to check, but I think it's 20-year anniversary of doing this ceremony. And what they do is all the gorillas that were born that previous year, they pick someone who's worked within conservation or has something to do in that field of wildlife, and they give them the honor of naming a baby gorilla. And it's beautiful. They come up with some of the most stunning names, and they believe that if you give the name to something, then you're more attached to it and you'll cherish it more. And I mean, that all works in conservation. You know about it, you've named it, you're gonna care a lot more. So yeah, so
So
I
what
have actually been back, yeah, three times since 2018, and the
What time of year is, sorry, the baby gorilla naming ceremony?
it's in September. It's in
September.
September every year, so it does vary the dates, and
Oh, okay.
I can definitely let you know what the dates are for this year later on. But it's I to be honest, I'm hoping to go back again this year for it.
That would be good. Well, you work with a Rwanda trekking company or a safari lodge company, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I work with a gentleman I met on my first visit there. His name's Greg Bakunzi, and he actually owns Red Rocks Rwanda. And what that is, it's a center where you can go and you really immerse yourself in the Rwandan culture. So you can do banana beer making, basket weaving. They do the traditional drumming and dancing with the ladies. There's an art gallery now, so you can go and like see the amazing artwork coming out of the region. But what I really appreciated with Greg is he actually really works on the sustainable tourism side of things. So he incorporates the community into the tourism chain. So when I met him and I saw what he was doing, I was so impressed. And I've worked with him ever since. So he on apart from Red Rocks, he runs Amahoro Tours, and they're a tour company based in Rwanda. And look, if you're going to go visit a country, you want someone to show you around that lives, eats, breathes, is the very soul of that country. And that's what his guides do. So, yeah, I've been working with Greg now ever since that very first visit and just helping to promote through my writing, through anyone I talk to that will listen, really, about how amazing Rwanda is and you need to go there.
Yeah, I think we talked about this, but I spent 6 months or 7 months actually in Africa a number of years ago now, and we didn't go to Rwanda. We did go to Uganda. I loved Uganda, actually. So lush with forests and, it was a little scary in the cities because it was a bit dangerous, but back then. I don't know what it's like now, but... I love Africa. It just stays within you, I find.
You know what? If you go on a trip to Africa, be prepared to go back time and time again. I actually just last year had a really big year for Africa, actually. I went over with Kaza Tourism, which is a new tourism group that's been built to incorporate the countries of Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Namibia, and Angola. And what they're trying to do is this cross-border, like, we'll open borders in a way. So they want the animals to be able to roam between the countries, giving them greater space. It's a huge conservation effort on their part, but they also want the travelers to be able to do the same. Come visit, be able to easily move between the countries. So I went over and didn't get to Angola, unfortunately, but definitely did Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Namibia. And then I snuck in probably a trip that was life-changing for me.
Tell.
Yeah, towards the end of last year, I snuck in a quick, it was only a week on the ground at the end of it, but I went and trekked the Rift Valley in Tanzania. And it's something that really most people go to Africa for the wildlife and the safaris. And while we did get to see all that, we went to the Serengeti for one night. The trekking of the Rift Valley, and it's called the Footsteps of Mankind. And you are literally walking on these ancient paths that the Maasai use, these routes that they use for migration, for their herding. And there was a few special moments on that trek, and it was hard. It was not like a walk in the park. You've got a path to walk on. This was climbing rubbled, filled mountains. It was really hard yakka. But we actually went to a place called Olduvai Valley. And this is where they have the casts, and they found the very earliest footprints of mankind, millions of years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. This is all new to me. I've not heard any of this. This is absolutely fascinating.
It is fascinating. I had no idea. Yeah. No idea this even existed. No. But we actually began the journey out at Lake Natron. Now, if you don't know Lake Natron, it's actually this lake. It's full of flamingos, so it's beautiful.
I've been there.
Yes. It's like the red lake. It looks like blood from the algae. But we actually found, we actually were taken to just outside Lake Natron camp. There are these other footprints. They're not as old as the ones up in Olduvai Valley or Olduvai Gorge, I should say, but they are still quite ancient footprints. And it was a really unique experience because we went out and walked along the lake, and we're leaving our own footsteps in the mud along the lake.
And then
we go and see where these other footprints were from people from many moons before us.
Oh, my God. That's just so evocative, isn't it? Like all those footsteps joining together over such a vast amount of time. I mean, it's just the human experience. Ugh.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was just such a different experience I've had in Africa. And so it really topped off the year of a really big, big African journey for me, really. Yeah, and I'm dying to go back and discover more. That region. Yeah, that region is stunning. And we just missed the migration, obviously, in the Serengeti. So that's definitely something I'm going to have to go back and see.
Yes, I wasn't there for that, so I didn't see that either. I went back to Africa in 2018. I took my son. But, you know, we did a – it was like a two-week tour, you know, safari tour. And me and my then husband, we'd spent 7 months in Africa. And he loved it, of course, but it was quite a different experience to camping every night in the middle of nowhere, you know, like it was very rough and ready. But I loved that. I loved it.
I think that's the true grit of Africa, isn't it? Mm. Like when you've got the African dirt in your shoes all over your clothes. Oh,
yes, we camped, so we washed in rivers. That was so you'd go for a wash and then the truck would get stuck in mud. But that was it. You weren't going to go back and wash again. those were the days.
It's entertaining, isn't it? And you know, it's still my favourite thing to do is having a bush wee in Africa. You know, when you're just going to look around and every single noise you hear, you're like, is that a lion? And you've never weed so fast and jumped back up in the truck so fast in your life.
Can I tell you a funny little story? We were in Ngorongoro Crater and we were camping and we were told to, the toilet block was quite a way away from where the tents were. And they said, don't go by yourself. Maybe I told you this already, but don't go by yourself, go with someone. And like, I'm a bit of an intrepid traveler, so I ignored that. As I'm prone to do. So I wander off going to, you know, in the complete darkness, and I got to the little huddy thing and these people were freaking out. And I said, what's wrong? And they said, oh, there's eyes in the grass. So they shone their torch and there were these eyes staring at us. And it was like, okay. So I said, stay there. I'm going to go and do my, you know, bits and pieces. And then, you know, walked back very quickly. And the next morning it was reported that there was a lion in the campsite. Now, whether it was a lion or whether it was, you know, whatever it was, that was pretty exciting after the fact.
After the fact, absolutely. After the fact.
I went back into my tent going, oh, yeah, Mon, sometimes you're a little bit of a fruitcake, you know. Sometimes you have to obey the rules.
Yeah. There's a reason why they're there.
Anyway.
That's the excitement, I think, of Africa. Like a lot of people say with Australia, like, oh, you've got all these dangerous animals. Oh. And but ours aren't half as big as the ones that get over there.
Mind you, at least you see them. Ours, they can.
Well, do you?
I know
they just creep up on you.
That is okay. You are right there. I stand corrected.
Moral of the story, people, make sure you are cautious when traveling Africa because the wildlife is wild.
It's wild, but everything in you tingles, I find.
It does. I call it, it gets into your soul and it's into your blood. Once it's in that bloodstream, you've got no hope. Like you're going to go back time and time again.
But I do think that kind of gets into your soul, as you said, if you go a little bit out of the ordinary. You know, if you only stay in a really plush safari lodge and an air-conditioned truck, then I'm not saying they're bad things, do as you wish, but I don't know, I think somehow touching the rawness, do you think that's what am I being a snob here?
No, look, I agree. There's so many different ways you can travel Africa. Like you said, have the real, raw, authentic experience. Like when I did the trekking of the Rift Valley. Now, we were fly camping, so it's the same thing. We're in tents. We're using outdoor bathrooms, showers. But these days they're able to add a tad of like glamping luxury to it. So
Yeah.
although you're in a tent, you're on a swag bed, and you have a little table next to you, and just those little extra touches that make it, yes, you are camping, but and look where they put the tents up. When you open that tent zip and you're looking out at like this gorgeous landscape, I mean, to be honest, I would sleep on a swag outside if I could wake up and see that. So there is different ways of doing it. But I guess one of the most important things you need to look at when like booking your African trip is just make sure you do a bit of research into your company. There
Yes.
is the right way to do it, and there is the wrong way to do it. And you might have known when you were in Africa, I don't know if you noticed driving through Kruger National Park, for example, you see all these little white crosses everywhere. And it's
Oh.
where people have literally got out the vehicle to take photos, and an animal's got them. And
Oh.
it's that ill education, and I guess people, there's a strong respect between the wildlife and what you're doing, and making sure that you're not interfering with them. You're looking after yourself, you're looking after the wildlife. And the right companies will be following those guidelines,
Yeah.
and they're the ones that you want to look at. So I really urge people to do a bit of research on the company you're booking with. Have they got a strong sustainability program?
Absolutely.
And look, a lot of Africa's quite good at it, involving the community into the tourism. Africa is really doing well with that, I think. You see a lot of the lodges you go to, they'll have all local staff hired. They'll have some sort of conservation program, whether it be you get to go out and notch rhino ears or do some lion tracking or something like that. Or they'll have some sort of like women's arts program or with the children and the schooling program. So those kind of things. It's just about, like I said earlier, where it's not just about enriching your life with that experience. It's how are you going to give back so those people can continue to offer experiences like this for travelers? And I think that's really important. And you should not be looking at any other companies beyond that are doing that. So, yeah.
Look, I agree. One of the things I love about travel is having a cultural experience. Meeting locals or, sort of not rushing around to all the sites and ticking them off, but sort of wandering and yeah, that sort of thing. I think, but everyone has their own travel
That's
reason,
right. That's
and good on them.
yeah.
Long as it's sustainable. We do
Yeah.
want in this day and and I, it's interesting. I was looking at how flying is really bad for the environment. But if you live as much sustainable life as you can, and you can offset some of that cost to the environment, I think, with various. Anyway, I think a holistic look at travel is a good thing.
Yeah. And I think it was a good point you just made with, I mean, especially in Australia, like we're so far from anywhere. Our flights to get anywhere, it's costly to the environment. It is. And that's where I believe this slow travel and slow tourism is going to be a good thing. Instead of just
Yes.
nipping like I did, I can't get around this, but I did nip to Kenya and Tanzania for 1 week, which
Yep.
is atrocious, and I will not be doing that in future. But go somewhere, go for longer periods of time, really immerse
Yes.
yourself in that country,
That's
and
right.
then you can kind of not justify, but it makes that long flight and long travel journey a bit more sustainable. And
Well,
then it's, yeah.
sorry, for us, for an Australian to travel, say to get to Europe, so Paris,
Yeah.
say, let's say, to go overland and to not fly at all. I just looked this up recently. It took this one guy 6 months to
Wow.
totally go, only trains, buses,
motorcycles, ferries,
Yeah.
you know, that sort of thing. Well, you know, that's not accessible or realistic for a lot of
No.
people, for most 99% of people. But I do think when we're at our destination or at our continent, then we can take advantage of trains and buses and ferries and things like that, to be honest.
Absolutely.
It is
Yeah.
hard when you're only traveling for like 2 weeks. It's much more difficult.
It is. And then I think if people are looking at more sustainable options, and that's why I did mention, like, look at your company, it makes that balance a bit better, I believe. So, and like, we all want to be better travelers at the end of the day. We want to do the right thing because we want to keep doing it, and we want our children and the next generation to do it. So,
And
yeah.
I'm not going to give up travel. Like, it's sort of integral to who I am as a person. It's what lights me up. I love it. I've just
Absolutely.
got to find ways to do it where I'm not destroying, you know, the
You
environment,
know,
really.
well,
So.
actually, a friend of mine's just taken to yotting, and that's a way that
Oh.
they're around.
Well, that would, yeah, I mean, that's wind, right?
Yeah, we just just need a nice little pretty penny to buy yourself a yacht, and then you can keep on traveling with the
Okay.
world oyster.
Anyone who's got a yacht out there who's listening, Kate and I, you know, we'll come on board. No
I'll
worries.
crew if I have
Around
to.
the Mediterranean, please. That'll be nice for me.
It just might be a long bit of a sail from Australia to the
Yeah,
Mediterranean.
oh, I don't know. I don't, being out in that wild sea seems a bit scary to me, but so Kate, you and I could talk about Africa until the rhinos come home. But
That's right.
do you like that little twist on
I
the cows
did.
come
Very nice.
home? I'm very clever. Anyway, what's another favorite experience or place that you may like to tell us about?
This one's a little off the beaten track
Oh,
and
right.
a little bit different, but hear me out. I'm going to say Papua New Guinea. Once again, yeah, most people go, ooh, a bit
I know.
dangerous.
That's what I think. That's my reaction as well.
Yeah, and look, you want to get in and out of Port Moresby as quickly as possible. I'm not going to lie. But once you do, I headed out to East New Britain, up into the Bining region, and went and got to witness the Bining Fire Dance Festival.
So, sorry, when you say, can you spell that? Is it BINDING, or what are you saying?
BAINING, Bining.
Bining. Okay.
Yeah, Baining,
Bining.
Bining. I pronounce it Bining.
Okay.
Yeah, but the Fire Dance Festival. And what that is, it's, and Papua New Guinea is good for this. So they have a lot of masked festivals. So where they have all the tribes and the clans will get out and they'll wear their traditional clothes and dress and they'll perform their cultural performances. But this one was a little bit special because I don't know if you've ever seen the masks with the big googly looking eyes and the kind of duck face.
Yeah, I've seen photos of that.
Yeah, they're the fire dancers. And what
Okay.
they do is they, as an initiation into manhood, or it might be a festival around the harvest, they will build up this fire and this chanting happens as they're building up this fire. And it was like really taboo. I felt wrong watching it.
Oh.
And yeah, it was like I was like the only person in the world witnessing this. And as the chanting continues and the night gets darker, they build the fire and build it up because they want to get lots of embers. And all of a sudden, out of the jungle, this lush jungle emerges these big masks. And it was really, really weird. And they run through the fire and kick up the embers, and it is the most spectacular thing to witness. Like, I was in awe. But it's not just about that fire dance, it's all throughout the day. Each of the different tribes from the area that have come will do their dance and performance. And it's exquisite. The outfits and their painted faces, and I mean there were tribes that were dressed up as geckos. There were ones
Oh,
that were
wow.
dogs.
Really?
There was this one that had this guy walked around, and there was this big contraption that he wore around his shoulders that had a cassowary hook on the end of it, and each time he stepped, it stabbed into his chest, and there was a little bit of blood, and that was a sign of manhood, and it was really fascinating. You've never seen so much color. The Hooliwigmen are not in this area, but there were the tribes dressed like that with all the bird feathers and the painted faces, and it was mind-blowing. I've never witnessed such a cultural display in my life. And the good thing is that's actually come back this year. They will be doing it again. I think also around September time is the Fire Dance Festival. So
Wow. I mean, I think that's extraordinary because it's not something that's easily accessible, something that's very common to do.
no.
So it's really a new experience, isn't it? Like if you've not done it
And
before.
no. And look, the islands around and islands of Papua New Guinea are absolutely stunning. Like, if you want undiscovered, unexplored, uncharted, you really want to go off the beaten track and you want to brag to your friends about, I've been somewhere that chances are they have not been. Like, Papua New Guinea is the place. And this festival is definitely a must see.
So do you work, have you worked with any like I don't like using the word tour companies, but organizations that facilitate these experiences, or do you have to go on your own?
No, look, I went over with South Sea Horizons, and once again, I was really impressed by the owner, Al, when I met him, for the same reasons. He really incorporates sustainable travel, gets the community involved. He also does the Kokoda Track, and the Kokoda trekking, and like the guides and porters he has on Kokoda with the guests. Like, one of them, he's direct ancestry to the Fuzzy Wuzzy Angels. So look, and
Yeah, that's beautiful.
really feeds any of that tourist dollar back into the community. And I really appreciate that. So I've traveled with Al a couple of times, and South Sea Horizons, and I really think that they're just getting it right, and I wouldn't pick anyone else to go with.
So I'm hearing that you're quite the intrepid traveler.
You could say that.
Is everything you do intrepid, or do you do, go to Bali and lay on a hammock by the
Look, there's
pool
always space for that.
or
To be honest, like, sometimes I come home from traveling and just like to be at home. That's part of my holiday, to be honest, is just to sit down and relax and not have a camera or a notebook and pen in my hand and constantly, because it's a big myth that travel writers and travel journalists just go on holidays and sit on deck chairs and sip cocktails.
it's your job, right? Like, so in many ways, even if you're kind of always on because you're a journalist, so you're looking out for the interesting, the extraordinary, things that will be of interest to your readers or listeners. So, you're on, right?
Yeah, always, always on. And even when we're off, we're on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's hard work. I mean, it's very rewarding, and I wouldn't change it for the world, but it's not just writing these days. You're also a photographer, you're a videographer, you have to do social media. And generally, you're on location, writing about the past location you've just been in, still filing deadlines, planning your next trip while trying to be present in the current destination you're in. It's a lot of work. It
So
really is.
how do you personally, if you want to answer this question, find ease amongst what sounds fairly hectic and demanding?
I sleep on planes a lot.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
I will be asleep before that plane even taxis off the runway.
Oh, now I
Unfortunately.
read, I'm sorry I had to interrupt, but I read that you shouldn't do that. It does something, and I can't remember why now, but it does something to you. So it's not good for you to sleep on taxiing off or coming in. Anyway,
Right.
you could look
That
that up.
explains a lot with me.
It makes you kooky. That's what it does, Kate. Makes you kooky. Keep
I heard
doing it.
the tip was you should set yourself in the time zone you're meant to be arriving in, so which also I fail at. So but yeah, look, I live quite a relaxing lifestyle when I'm back home. I live on property, and I just don't leave, to be honest. I go up to the shop maybe to get some groceries, but that's about it. Like, it is a very relaxing lifestyle I lead when I'm home, and I think that really balances it out. And I mean, the fact that if you love what you do, it's not really work, is it?
No,
So,
no.
yeah.
Well, I mean, it may make you tired, and there's always stressors with a good job, but it doesn't, it invigorates you. Would you say that? Like
Yeah,
doing
it
what you
doesn't make
love
me
invigorates you.
unhappy. So, and I kind of thrive off the stress a little bit at times, to be honest.
Well, you are that kind of girl by the sounds of things. You like
I
adventure, you like to kind of push the envelope, so to speak, that old term. But
yeah.
right.
I know it's really cliche, but we're only here once, and I think every moment counts. And I'm pretty happy with the fact that I'm pretty sure when I'm on my deathbed, I'm going to say I squeezed in as much as possible.
Oh, look, I can say that without a shadow of a doubt. I've had the
Yeah,
best
right.
life. I've had hardships and stuff like everybody has, but no, I'm the same as you. When I travel, I love it and I revel in it. But when I get home, I love kind of nestling in and,
Yeah.
going on my little beach walks and stuff like
Yeah.
that. I really quieten a little bit that really. I'm still curious, but when you're over, I think, I don't know what you think about this. If I had to put some, well, I'm going to ask you instead of talking. If you had to
Yeah.
put a couple of things in your travel bag, sort of metaphysical things, what would you put in? Like things that you think garner you, support you, make for a really good travel experience?
Really good question. To be honest, I probably wouldn't put anything only because I like to travel light for
Oh,
starters.
okay. So I'm not talking about physical
Oh,
things.
no.
Oh, you
Yeah,
know
no.
that? Okay.
Yeah, I understand. I was trying to be funny there.
Oh, were you sorry? Oh, okay. That's hysterical, darling.
But also I like to just be surprised and not be prepared all the time, because I think a lot of my work is set itineraries for a majority of it. Go here, see this person, speak to this person, you're eating dinner at this time at this place, and it's all very organized. So I think if I chose for my personal travel, the only thing, I mean, metaphorically, I would put in is my partner and my dogs so they could enjoy it too. And
That's
I
a
wouldn't
big
have to
bag.
share it all when I get back.
Wouldn't it be nice if we could take our dog with us? I mean,
Oh, stop it.
honestly, I think I would put in curiosity. I find
Yeah.
if I'm not curious, then, if I'm a bit closed in for some reason, if something's going on mentally, it's
Yeah.
not as good for me, curiosity is really my and really most important thing that I take traveling, I think.
Yeah, I think that and an open mind is a must,
Open mind, yes,
and patience, especially in this time of
absolutely,
post-COVID.
yeah,
Like, You've got to expect that your luggage is going to get lost. You've got to expect that the flight's going to be delayed. Like, just this is, I think people very quickly forgot about the time when we couldn't travel. And all I do is see these days people whining and whinging about, oh, my flight was delayed 2 hours. I was like, yeah, well, that's better than 2 years. Like, just remember, everyone's still trying to, I mean, I know it's been a while since COVID, but people are still trying to get companies back. Like, they're trying to get their companies back on track. They're trying to get staff. They're trying to get staff trained. And I think a bit of patience and kindness, it doesn't go astray when traveling. And to be honest, that's half of the fun. If things go wrong, just turn it into a positive. Like, we've really got to be better at that. I see it a lot, and it really does frustrate me. That, and I guess, like I've said before, people being bad travelers, like, don't do things you shouldn't. We see a lot out of Bali these days, don't we? People taking photos, running nude.
That really ignited a whole lot of stuff for the Indonesian government and wanting to change a whole lot of their rules, actually. The rules haven't come in yet. They're pretty draconian, but I don't know if they'll ever come in. If they do, a lot of Australians won't go to Bali. But but I think you're so right, Kate. I think flexibility and patience is just integral. I remember I was in Nairobi Airport, and
I'll say no more.
we were getting a connecting flight, and we were going to miss it because this drama happened, and this other couple were just screaming at the, you know, the workers there. And I mean, we were both stressed actually within ourselves, but I remember I let them walk out, storm out, and I walked in and I just was kind of calm. Because, you know, sometimes when someone behaves really badly, it kind of, you somehow it tips you to be really good. It's so horrible to see that. And we got on, they managed to get us in a flight that connected, but those other people didn't get on a flight.
Be kind to people, they'll be kind back. And nobody wants to help someone that's screaming in their face.
And that's a lesson at home, traveling, work, in everywhere, time. Isn't it? Yes. We won't go on to COVID and all of that, but I do think there is a heightened stress around at the moment. And I think if you're going overseas thinking everything's going to be peachy and everything's going to run to schedule and people are all going to be great, then I'm a mindset coach for travel, right? And one of the things I kind of hone in on is expectations. Be very, very loose with your expectations, because often they don't work out how you expect. And if they're too sort of fixed, then you're just going to get disappointed and you're going to come home and go, well, that was a bit of a crappy holiday. You know, I didn't get this. And there were people queuing up at the Mona Lisa, you know, like, how dare they, you know, this kind of stuff. It's like, expectations can ruin a holiday.
And I have to say, with those expectations, one of the biggest killers for it is social media and Instagram. I experienced that. I went to Tonga, out to the islands of Hapai, and I was there to swim with the humpback whales. Beautiful experience. A gorgeous place. We're staying at the Sea Change Eco Retreat. And I get there, we go out for the first few days and we've got some amazing like whale experiences. I really love this company. They really keep the distance from the whales. They're very strict on you cannot approach them. If the whale approaches you, you have to move back, which, mind you, is hard in flippers. But I did have a moment where a young baby humpback came towards me. I'm trying to swim backwards in flippers and it went right underneath me. I thought I was going to sit on it. But they're really responsible with how they do the whale swim. But I thought it was a fantastic experience. It did, however, rain pretty much on off for the whole week I was there. So it was kind of overcast. That didn't bother me because you're in the water anyway. You're not really looking up at the sky. But there was a couple there and they were really disappointed in the experience. And they're like, well, we were expecting white sand beaches and blue skies and this weather's just been like terrible. And I thought, are you kidding me? You didn't come here to see the weather. You came here to swim with the whales and you've done that and we've had amazing experiences. But it's because they saw it on Instagram of the beautiful shots of and I felt like saying to them, you realize that they would have been had to have everything line up perfectly for that. They probably had some camera crews with them taking the photos, having lighting. And that's what happens. We've seen it. We've seen people out there doing their Instagrams and you see them with mirrors to reflect water things like that. And it's just so unrealistic and it gives the expectations to people that this is what it's always going to be like. And unfortunately, we can't control the weather. We can't control wildlife. We can't control those kind of things. If you don't get it like it's in the Instagram picture, doesn't matter. You're still experiencing it. So
yeah, we do have to be careful with our expectations. And it's quite natural, you know, to have them. But we just have to hold on, or not even hold on to them really, but just have them. It's like you know, trying to hold water in your hand. If you're grasping at it, then the water just disappears. But if you loosely cup it, you actually can keep some of that water in your hand. So
enjoy it.
But, you know, I think it's a different way of traveling. Certainly when I started traveling at 20, I won't say how old I am, such a young thing actually in spirit, but it was a completely different experience. You know, I never called home because it was too expensive. None of this WhatsApp or any of that. I've got to say it was fantastic, Kate, because I got away from all of my family for, you know, 2 years and didn't really hardly ever speak to them at all. It was bliss. Anyway, but
I wish in a way that we could go back to that because you're really in the moment then, aren't you? You're not thinking, oh, I've got to wait until time zone to message back home and say I'm still alive, I'm okay, and got to post this up quickly on social media
and places were far less you know, there were far less people there, less. Like I remember going to Venice and there was hardly anyone around, really. It was, I mean, there were people around but not like now, you know. It's you have to really pick and choose your places to go to get semi-authentic experience in countries that are, well, like Italy and France and, you know, these sort of places. It's very busy, but that shouldn't mean you shouldn't go for it, you know. I mean, just choose the city or the town that's just away from that major place. You'll get similar architecture, food and all of that sort of thing, but you won't get the crowds of tourists.
I hear what you're saying. Over tourism, I saw that. Did you see that movie by Gia Ventures with like Bruce Poontip did? And it was all about the I can't remember what it's called for the life of me, but it's a fantastic documentary that basically delved into the way of travel these days and over tourism and really focused on how it's becoming a problem.
It is, and with Airbnb, you know, people can't afford to live in their own area. Is that on Netflix or is that like on YouTube or something, that G-Adventures?
Oh, it's called The Last Tourist. I just remembered it. It's fantastic. I believe you can view it online. Okay. I don't know if it hit Netflix. I went and saw it at the cinemas. They had a screening and actually met Bruce and had a talk to him.
Oh, how wonderful.
He's such a visionary man. He's incredible what he's done. But the same line of ethos I love is he really focuses on sustainable travel and giving back to those communities and making sure he's employing the local staff. And
Yeah, I went when I took my son to Africa, we did a G I don't generally do tours myself, but we did a tour. Just Africa is much easier to be with something a little bit organized. And it was terrific. It was a terrific company, actually. I recommend it to anyone who's listening. They have small groups, so 8, 12 people max, I think. And that's nice. Footprint's a bit lighter and smaller buses and cars and things, yeah.
Yeah, and he does a lot of I guess within the communities as well. When I spoke to him, he was talking about South America and how the Inca Trail and one of the places that's getting quite busy, and how he was a bit sad to see that happening. But like you said, going to somewhere that's maybe a little close by, still getting the same kind of experience. And he went and he met these women that were doing some amazing arts and crafts in a nearby village. And he loved it so much, he decided that the tours would stop in at this village, give people to buy an authentic souvenir. Directly, the money goes into the hands of those very women that's making it, not to some shop owner, and just those kind of things. So I love what they're doing with that.
100%. I think G Adventures is a great, and they, I mean, I don't have anything to do with G Adventures professionally, but they do tours all over the world,
Everywhere. And places you wouldn't think of, and like getting away from those main touristy areas. So, but I mean, the good thing is there's a few companies out there doing it. Intrepid Travel's another one that I really rate. I think they're fantastic. Same ethos as G Adventures, Adventure World. So, circling back around, just do some research on who you're traveling with, and make sure that they are one of these companies that are really doing the right thing. So,
Absolutely. So, Kate,
yeah.
where's your next adventure? Where's your next
Oh,
journalistic job or holiday?
take a guess.
Africa.
I am heading back to South Africa. It's been a while since I've been there, to be honest. So I'm heading back to South Africa in the end of February, March, and I'll be going out to Modigwe, which is kind of special for me because the first place I ever went in Africa was South Africa, way back in like 2000 and oh, I want to say 2004 maybe. And I went out and I stayed at a lodge in Modigwe called Impedimo, and that was it. That was what changed me. I'm like, oh, I love Africa. I love everything about Africa. I'd been to like one little game reserve in South Africa, and I loved Africa. And so, but I'm going back to Modigwe Reserve on this trip. So I'm really excited because it's the birthplace of my love of Africa.
I am jealous, I've got to say. I would love to go. I've never been to South Africa. We ran out of money when we were on our big 7 month trip to Africa, so we had to head home after we got to Tanzania and then ran out of money. So couldn't get any lower than that. But one day I'll get
Well, it
to
sounds
South
like
Africa.
South Africa and Rwanda need to be on your
I
hit
think
list.
so. Yes, I'm putting it out there. Call me, call me. Well, look, Kate, we have tried to do this podcast on many occasions and been living such busy lives. It hasn't, it is finally come into being today. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on to the Boffler podcast and sharing some of your great tales and inspiring us and urging us to travel sustainably and to connect with culture. And to be adventurous and bold, and to, all those good things that you've shared with us, today.
Oh,
Thank you.
wonderful.
Thank
Oh,
you.
no, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for
Oh,
having me.
I appreciate it. And hopefully I'll see you again. Now I know you're actually living in the same state as me.
Just technically up the road a couple of hours, but if not, I'll see you in Rwanda.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's a deal. All right, well, Thank you again for sharing your story in the Buffalo podcast. And I hopefully I'll be a bit more regular with some of these podcasts. I've got lots of new projects starting up. I'm actually taking a small group on the Camino de Santiago, a mindfulness Camino walk in May this year, which is very exciting, and lots of adventures ahead. So thank you everybody for listening in, and go well, live in joy. Ciao.
Thank you.